The man accused of stabbing four high schoolers, killing one of them at a Shelton House party back in 2022, is back in the spotlight today. I'm talking about Raul Valley. He will be back in court next month after the state apparently filed amended charges. Now, you know this case probably, but if not, really quick up to speed. Valley killed Fairfield Prep student Jimmy McGrath back in 2022. But over the summertime, the jury failed to reach a verdict in his trial, and that led to a mistrial. So we want to get some legal perspective on this case. We go to attorney Bill Bloss. Bill is not at all connected or involved in this case, but if you've been tuning in, he has been providing legal expertise on not just this case, but many others of high interest to our WICC audience. Bill, welcome back. For people who missed what happened this summer, could you quickly kind of recap how the mistrial came to be and how we now are looking at amended charges against Valley?
Sure. The mistrial was based on the fact that the jury could not agree on the charges facing Valley that involved a lack of intent. In other words, reckless assault, reckless manslaughter. The jury acquitted on all of the charges involving an intent to injure or an intent to kill. So it was pretty clear from what the jury did was that they were just not convinced that Valley intended to hurt somebody, but they were not able to agree on whether he acted recklessly leading to someone's death or someone's injury. So that's why we're back. We've got four charges. We've got reckless manslaughter, which is a Class C felony, punishable by up to 10 years in prison. And then three counts of assault in the second degree, which is a Class D felony, which means a maximum of 5 years on each count. So he's still in hot water, certainly, but it's not as hot as it was 6 months ago.
So because the state is the one that filed these amended charges, this is not a civil lawsuit, correct? Are we looking at another trial possibly?
Oh, we're definitely, this is definitely a criminal case, and it's definitely another trial.
Okay.
Unless there's a plea bargain. There can always be a plea bargain. 90% of criminal cases are resolved by plea bargains. There's just not the capacity to try every single case that is every single arrest that's made in the state of Connecticut. So, yeah, no, it's definitely going to be a criminal process of some sort, whether a trial or a plea bargain. I would venture to say with a very high degree of certainty that the state is not going to drop the charge. That's the only other result that could happen.
I honestly, though, did think, Attorney Bloss, that this was going to come from the McGrath family or one of the families of the other students who were stabbed at that party. I honestly didn't know if the state was really going to come back and amend and press amended charges. I was a little surprised by honestly.
Well, the state has a responsibility if they believe that a criminal law has been broken to pursue the charge. And the fact that the jury hung, at least there were press reports that the jury was overwhelmingly in favor of convicting on the reckless charges, after unanimously agreeing to acquit on the intentional assault and manslaughter charges. So I think it's this is not unusual at all. It's unusual that a case partially acquits and partially hangs. That's true. But it's not unusual that if that happens, that the state would retry the charges for which there was a hung jury.
So we've got Attorney Bill Bloss here again. Absolutely no connection to this case, but has been with us since this case came about in 2022 and has been giving us legal expertise on it and perspective. So with it sounds like a new trial, same location. You think it'll happen in Milford Superior Court again? Do you think they'll change locations? Obviously, you're looking at a brand new jury if they don't do a plea bargain. But are we looking at basically a repeat, but maybe a different approach to the case?
Well, that would be the presumption that it would be back in Milford. I will tell you that, you know, I was thinking about that a little bit this morning. I wouldn't be shocked if the defense asked to move the case out of Milford just because there has been a lot of publicity, mm-hmm. and it is not going to be easy at all to pick a jury for that case, because people have heard about it. And you can still be on a jury if you've heard about a case, but you can't be on a jury, or you're not supposed to be on a jury, if you have strong feelings about it. It would make it difficult for the person to be impartial. People have opinions about this case now, and it is going to be a very painstaking process to pick a jury, to get six people plus, you know, say three alternates who are willing to say anyway that they don't have strongly held feelings and they can be impartial. So, and that's that I'd be very surprised if you know, when the judge asks at the beginning of the process, how many of you have heard of the case and do you have strong feelings about it? I wouldn't be surprised if a third to a half of people raise their hands. I think that just is where we are realistically with the amount of coverage there's been, and it's a very small jury pool in Milford. It really, you know, it doesn't go across the state of Connecticut. Like in federal court, you pick a jury from all of Fairfield County, plus moving up into Litchfield County, even for the Bridgeport seat of court, and Hartford goes all the way from all the Rhode Island border all the way to the New York border.
So that is a really small pool. That is really interesting. I didn't realize that. But I guess when you explain it that way, that's a small, so much smaller population to pick from.
Well, it's really just Milford and the Valley,
right?
And the Valley is where this happened, right? And so some of these young people, people are going to know, potential jurors are going to know somebody. It's just it's going to be a very long process, Melissa. It is. But the good news is Connecticut has. I mean, I guess it's good news. Connecticut has individual questioning of potential jurors, so that there's at least going to be a chance to root out any kind of strongly held opinions. But it's going to take a very, very long time. I wouldn't be surprised if jury selection took a month.
Unless there is a plea deal, we can expect that there is probably going to be a retrial for Rahul Valley, the man accused of stabbing four high schoolers, killing one of them, Jimmy McGrath, during a Shelton House party back in 2022. And he is due back in court. Rahul Valley is due back in court next month. We've got attorney Bill Bloss here, who is our legal expert on the show, has nothing to do with the case, but gives us his legal perspective and just expertise in understanding what we could probably predict will happen next. So with a retrial, my first question, Bill, is do you think all the witnesses are going to need to take the stand again? And as you and many of our listeners know, all that testimony from the first trial, it's online. I mean, you could literally watch it right now. How does that impact a potential retrial? And again, do you think all those witnesses are going to be called back to the stand?
Well, I think anybody who's available is going to be called back to the stand. Now, some of them may be out of state now. They may be in college. Some of them may have moved. In that case, their testimony from the first trial would be able to be played. Now, interesting question, whether the video would be allowed to be played or whether it would only be the transcript would be read. Historically, what would happen is that a person, somebody, a court member of the court staff or somebody, a paralegal in one of the law firms, would actually read the transcript and the questioner would ask the questions that are in the transcript, and the so-called witness would read the answers from the transcript of the first trial. But this is all on video, as you note. And so I think probably the prosecutor would make a pitch to have the video played if a witness is unavailable. Other than that, it's going to be a repeat. And retrials are not a lot of fun. They are. It's almost like a play. If I don't want to minimize it, certainly, but everybody knows what the answers are. Everybody knows what the questions are. There are really no surprises at a retrial. So it's going to be a different experience. I think it's quite fair to say.
Okay, and I also think I ask that too because the emotional toll this takes on these families and these young people, I just think is extraordinary. I know we felt it just watching it from afar, but to certainly, I can't even imagine what they're feeling. Now, the other thing that I think came into question during the first trial was there were two students, one in particular, but two students that were offered immunity that were friends with the with Vrao Valley at the time. And kept being brought up a lot. And truly, from just a watching perspective, it felt like one of those people in particular was a huge reason why the jury really couldn't come to a verdict, because there were so many questions as to whether or not this was planned, whether or not this was really his idea, whether or not he actually wanted the wet. All of those questions kind of kept coming back to people who had immunity. So my first question is, do they remain immune in this retrial? But also, you know, as long as they are, if they are still immunity, does that really, how do we, I guess, have a verdict?
Well, their immunity stands. The state cannot pull their immunity after they've already testified, unless there's a claim that the witnesses testified falsely. And I haven't heard that anybody says that, or the state says it doesn't say that anyway. So, the state doesn't have to call those witnesses again. They might decide, you know what, in retrospect, that wasn't the greatest witness for us, so we're not gonna call that person. That could certainly happen. But if that happens, then the defense could call that witness, or the defense could use the transcript from the first trial. So there's going to be a kind of it's much more of a known process now. You know what the witness is going to say. You know what the answers to any questions are going to be. Is it worth having the person testify, or is it not worth having the person testify? And so everybody's going to make that assessment witness by witness, but all of the evidence is going to be available, and it will either be introduced, or they'll decide, you know what, this one's just not worth it. It didn't add anything. So we're not going to call the witness at all.
It does feel like the McGrath family just wants justice. Earlier this month, if people missed it in the news, a lawsuit that was filed by the family of Jimmy McGrath, they dropped it against the owners of that home in Shelton. And it really does feel like they just want justice for Jimmy. So I am curious to see, like you said, Bill, if there's going to be a plea deal, just to avoid doing a retrial and to say, look, at the end of the day, a high schooler was murdered and nobody is going to pay the consequence for that. And so I do wonder if we're leaning towards just a plea deal. I don't know. I don't know.
The state will certainly offer something. Now, here's the interesting thing. None of the charges have a mandatory minimum sentence. So the prosecutor would not have to be convinced to come to any particular further reduction of charges in order for a judge to sentence Valley to whatever he or she thinks is fair. And that could be anywhere from probation to 25 years in prison. So I would expect that the state would still drive a pretty hard bargain. And then it's going to be up to the judge to say, you know what, that's not fair under the circumstances. I think something less might suffice. Now, the victim's family, we have a constitutional amendment in Connecticut that says the victim, the family of a victim, or the victim himself, if is not deceased, has a right to be heard, both in terms of what the framework of a plea deal might be, and also a right to be heard to the judge when the judge is imposing a sentence. So that's treated very seriously in Connecticut. I think the criminal court judges are really sensitive to what the impact of a crime is on families, and they want to make sure the families are heard, and they want to make sure that the families at least get a sense that they have had their day in court, which I think clearly the McGrath family has had and will continue to have. But at the end of the day, the victim's family doesn't control the outcome. At the end of the day, the prosecutor is 100% in control of the charges, and the judge is 100% in control of the sentence. So remains to be seen where we wind up.
Yeah, certainly. Attorney Bill Bloss, always appreciate your expertise. Thank you so much, Finn. We'll see what happens next.